in your face. Great show today, full of midsummer guests, kicking off with Danish Shake, whose production, much to do with law, but more to do with love, will be happening at Gasworks in February, and they join us on the line. Danish, welcome to 3CR.
Thanks, Tim. Glad to be here.
It is fascinating. It's a bit of a connection with Taylor Swift and the law. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I'm really interested in is how do lawyers use this thing that we call the affidavit, which is a device that bridges people's lived experience to the law, right? So it kind of translates this thing that, you know, otherwise seems very much ethereal and outside the domain of reality, and it brings it into, you know, like lived experience. And so if you think of the affidavit like a bridge, well, who better than the best writer of bridges and, you know, pop music, Taylor Swift. And so one of the things that the show does is then looks at how Taylor Swift writes her great bridges, such as, you know, the bridge in Love Story, which is a song that begins as a reimagining of Romeo and Juliet, but it's very much the Romeo and Juliet that we know. So you have the lovers meeting, you have their families feuding, and it's just kind of following the same storyline. And then we get to the bridge, and in the bridge, the song kind of slows down, and then it starts departing from the reality that we know. So the lovers meet at the outskirts of town, and it looks like something else has happened here, and then something else you realize as there's a key change. Romeo gets on his knees and he's like, marry me, Juliet. I've had a chat with your dad. And he's like, yeah, go buy a white dress. And so that bridge takes us into this imagined other reality where Romeo and Juliet will now have a happy ending. And so, you know, just like that, Taylor Swift takes some of these classic stories of the canon and then transforms it into this fairy tale happy ending. And so one of the things that I was interested in was, all right, so I am a lawyer who was part of the litigation to decriminalize homosexuality in India. And this was a 160-year-old colonial law. And one of the things that we had to do then was write affidavits that bridged this reality, the reality of this colonial law, and then bridged it to another reality where the law didn't exist. So that's kind of what the show is doing.
And so many intersections there. And I can see why you are a performer, because there is such a performative element to the law, especially court cases, right?
Absolutely. You know, so from the very start, just given how, you know, judges wearing wigs, of course, the way lawyers wear robes, the entire protocols that you follow in the courtroom, the way you address the judges, the way you have this kind of back and forth, it's very, very performative. There's a lot of like rat-a-tat dialogue always happening. Then, of course, the only thing is that these performances in the courtroom have very real, sometimes very violent consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would have seen that, you know, fighting for law reform in India. Tell us a bit more about that experience and your role.
Absolutely. So I came of age in India in, you know, this would have been the mid-2000s. And so this was a time when the colonial law that criminalized homosexuality was very much in place, was very active. And so to be a lawyer then was often to deal with stories of the police persecuting queer men, queer women across different kinds of spaces, whether it was like public or whether it would be more private raids. You'd also have stories where families would chase their children across the country, and they would be using this law to aid and abet them in, you know, that kind of pursuit. And so you're constantly encountering stories like this. And then, of course, the additional layer to this was that I was a gay man myself. And so it was this thing where I was trying to work with a system that essentially illegitimized my very existence. And so that was a really complicated kind of thing to play with. But also, at the same time, what I was really lucky to have was all these really inspiring queer activists who didn't give up hope, and in fact had a very strong sense of hope and possibility that the law could be something else, you know. And so they said that it's still, we have all these other tools and tactics at our disposal, and so there are still ways to survive and thrive in the shadow of the law. And so that's kind of what we had to do. And that's ultimately what we did. So, you know, ultimately, Section 377, this sodomy law that criminalized homosexuality, was struck down through a legal challenge where we went to the Supreme Court of India and we said, yes, there is this colonial law, but this law invalidates another law which we think is a more important law. And that's the Constitution of India, which we drafted at the time of freedom from colonial rule. And so the Constitution of India contains Bill of Rights. And we said, you know, these are rights that protect the right to privacy, the right to personal liberty. And that is a right that should be available to all Indian citizens. And if you are going to take that seriously, then you do have to strike down this other law that criminalizes homosexuality. And the court eventually listened to us. Yeah.
It was a great victory, and it must have been an intellectual and emotional roller coaster, because that case in 2013 was lost. That's why you went to the Supreme Court and you finally had that victory. Can you tell us a little bit about just the impact that that win has had on people's lives over there?
Absolutely. So one of the many ways in which the law kind of, the law before it was struck down, the way it impacted your lives was, you know, not just in terms of you being afraid of being picked up by the police, but it was all these indirect ways in which you struggled with coming out in the workplace, or you might live with a partner and then, you know, property rights were a huge problem, other ways in which, you know, you might say, for example, struggle with accessing your partner in a healthcare kind of situation. And so, that obviously, like, there have been all these really small incremental kinds of changes that have come into place and that have just helped people just live fuller lives. But also there's just been this massive change in the national ethos. So 2018, right, we decriminalized homosexuality right then. And just 2 years after that, you have a massive petition placed before the court saying that we now deserve same-sex marriage. And so ultimately, while we did lose that case 2 years ago, the point is that people were able to imagine this other future, right? Imagine this other kind of reality. And that only happened because we no longer had to labor under the shadow of criminality anymore.
Tell us about Danish Shake the performer and kind of, you know, what you like on stage, because it's a wonderfully unique Midsummer production that you are performing.
Absolutely. So I think one thing that I talk about in the show is that, so this show has a main character. The main character's name is Danish Shake, which, yes, happens to be my name, but also the main character is semi-fictional. And the main character is semi-fictional in the sense that, you know, we're all slightly fictional, but it's also fictional in the sense that it's only partially rooted in reality. But just because it's partially rooted in reality does not mean that it's not fully true. So that just sounds like I'm kind of doing a lot of legal speak. But basically, it's about the idea that we have different selves and different personas, you might say different eras, and each self makes sense and speaks the truth at a certain point in our lives. And so the self that I have right now, the Danish Shake that's speaking to you on the phone, is not the same Danish Shake who was in court in 2013, is not the same Danish Shake who went to law school in 2006, is not the same Danish Shake who did a PhD in 2019, but it's what we do in the show is I try to inhabit each of those personas. And what I try to show is that, you know, for this Danish Shake to exist right now, and for any of us to exist in the moment right now and to live a full life, it's important to hold on to those past selves, those past lives, and to nourish them as well as we can.
Wow, you must really go into these zones when you're on the stage to kind of, you know, go down those rabbit holes of oneself to be able to tap into, you know, that depth.
Yeah, so I can tell you that my therapist would find this show extremely boring because he's heard a lot of just like the different strands of what the show is doing. But yeah, I think it's very much kind of mining the things that I've learned from past experience, and because this is the thing that happens to a lot of us, right? So you have a younger self, and there are many things that we are as when we are younger. You know, like we're impressionable, we make mistakes, but also we're incredibly vulnerable and we're quite open. And then as we go through life and as we accrue experience, we calcify in some ways, right? So you become like a harder version of yourself. You're kind of less open to the experience of the world. And so one of the things with doing the show has actually been understanding that the importance of that vulnerability, the importance of being able to reach back to that past self that was vulnerable, and bringing that vulnerability into the present moment right now.
Wow, so it kind of makes you feel young again, or it kind of makes you feel in touch with different parts of yourself that mean that you can relate better to not just people, but situations and constantly learn in life.
That's exactly it. And I want to, I mean, this is just another way of going back to the Taylor Swift connection, but one of the things that I do talk about in the show is, you know, it is inspired by what Taylor Swift does with the Eras Tour. You know, and the Eras Tour is many things, but it is a celebration of all these past personas of Taylor Swift. So it's a celebration of the Taylor Swift who wrote these really sappy high school love songs when she was 17. And then this Taylor Swift who, for better or worse, experimented with rap in her mid-20s. And then the Taylor Swift who wrote tortured poetry, you know, 2 years ago. And what she does is she goes on stage and then she reaches back to each of those eras and each of those selves and says that they're all important and they're all worthy of celebration. And then without those, the present self would not be there. So I think that's a really important lesson for all of us.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, much to do with law, but more to do with love is happening at the Gasworks Arts Park, February 4 to 7. Danny Shaikh, it has been wonderful chatting with you today on 3CR. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, James. It was a pleasure.
Cheers. The wonderful Danny Shaikh there. 3CR.
In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ+ communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.